Siren Radio.
And the weather today indeed, it'll be cloudy with the odd spot of drizzle in the morning with sunny spells scheduled for the afternoon. All this and more on Siren Radio. Fear of everything, really. False expectations appearing real, perhaps, but it does seem as though there's a new age fear factor that's gripping 21st century Britain. And as we've already spoken about in previous programmes, it seems that, forget fears of spiders and snakes, they're still there, but over half of British folk suffer from at least one modern phobia, such as running out of a phone battery. Now, to address this, to begin to put some sort of background to this, we're delighted to welcome two wonderful folk. First of all, Clinical Director from the Chelsea Psychology Clinic, that would be the wonderful Dr. Elena Torini. How are you, Elena?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. And also from the British Heart Foundation, Face of Fear Manager at the BHF, Daniel Field. How are you, Daniel?
I'm good, thank you.
Marvellous. Elena, if we can come to you first, is this a case of, you know, we take our mobile phones away and suddenly we just can't cope with life?
Absolutely. Yes, well, it is very interesting to me, really. I've been thinking about why has this developed, and I would say that these days, with our mobile phone, we're connected to other people at all times. We are connected to our loved ones, we're connected to our peers, to the world, and we have become extremely dependent on this, to the point that we feel that it would be a complete threat to our sense of self to be without them.
couldn't believe that one in five folk would rather be locked in a room full of creepy crawlies for an hour than go a year without any likes on social media. Isn't this a case of we should apply what William Shatner once said to Trekkies and say, get a life, for goodness sake?
Well, unfortunately for young people, that is the kind of life that they have most of the time. It's all on social media rather than real kind of life. But I would say that there is a great opportunity here, because the Face of Fear campaign that the British Heart Foundation is launching is all about being able to conquer fear. And I think that especially for young people who have grown up with having constant access to technology, it's a very, very good time to try something different, to try to be disconnected from social media, maybe even just for a week, in order to experience the relief that that could bring.
Daniel, that's your cue very much in terms of the Face of Fear campaign. Now, as I say, I can understand coping with exam stress or indeed fear of failure, possibly. This is one that, well, I must admit, I find quite surreal. Can you actually get sponsored to actually cope with your fear of losing social media?
Yeah, well, do you know, the fascinating thing about fear is that it's personal to each and every one of us. So for one person who may be scared of spiders, another person, the same level of fear may be applied for, you know, not having any Wi-Fi connection or their phone running out of battery. And as Elaine has kind of alluded to, it's really fascinating how the type of fears have changed over the last few years. With those, we're at a kind of tipping point where those traditional and 21st century phobias are kind of on an equal level. And, you know, this is a great opportunity for people to sign up to Face of Fear and get their friends and family, who are probably aware of how much of a anxiety or a phobia their fear is to them, to raise some money for a great cause and also take the first step on the way to conquering their fear.
I know that Tristan Decaphobia, I believe, is the fear of 13, so Friday the 13th sort of springs to mind, and so on, and there are superstitions within that field. Clowns, yeah, okay, I can understand that. Elena, again, as we work through this, is it literally a case of people can be frightened of everything, including possibly being afraid of radio interviews?
Indeed. Well, that would be very normal, of course. Yes, people are frightened of anything. It's very much about what interpretation you make of a situation, if you perceive it to be really threatening. And that might be threatening not only in terms of physical survival, as I guess spiders and snakes and so on might be about, but also very terrifying in terms of your sense of self. Am I popular? Am I liked? Are other people still in my life thinking about me? Then that becomes as much of a sort of threat to our psychological self as once upon a time it was all about our physical survival.
Okay, Daniel, this anti-anxiety Face of Fear challenge, which occurs in the month of June, has a target of basically folk combating their biggest phobia by the end of July. Talk us through it. How can people get involved and how can people address this whole thing?
Yeah, if you go to www.bhf.org.uk/fear, you can find out more information on Britain's top fears, along with some information on the different types of challenges. The key thing with this challenge is we want to make it accessible to everybody. So whether your fear is really quick and simple to try and combat, or whether it's a big challenge like jumping out of a plane and skydiving to conquer your fear of heights, head to our website. You can sign up from tomorrow, and we're encouraging people to take on their challenge in the month of July.
That makes perfect sense. I must admit, earlier when I was listening to Elena talking about her experiences on airlines and so on, I was fearing that you couldn't hear me at all, and obviously you couldn't. So, you know, that's the whole package of life and various other bits and pieces. Elena Torini, it's been marvellous sharing some thoughts with your good self, and hopefully it hasn't been too scary. I mean, we like to feel that sort of we can breathe. That's the important thing, and cope with the whole system from that point of view. And likewise, Daniel Field as well. Many thanks indeed. Take care and face those fears with pride. Take care now.
Thank you.
Gemma King, what's your major fear? Fear of failure? Fear of challenges? Fear of nobody turning up at the Lincoln Show? You actually open the whole thing through and you think, well, we can't hear anything. You know, what's the fear, Gemma, for yourself?
Definitely spiders. That's definitely
spiders.
My biggest fear, yeah.
Tessa, you seem to have an arachnophobe.
Yeah, I'm the same with spiders. I mean, I know that's quite a common one. Mm. I don't like hurting them, but yeah, I have some kind of phobia of them. I just don't like them.
First programme, of course, Emma Haig. Any fears that you have? Moths, I believe.
Yeah, I'm terrified of them. I hate them.
Just goes to show, really, sort of the fear. Room 101, what would we actually put it into? In a matter of moments, we'll find out how we can actually make huge savings with respect to fuel bills and various other bits and pieces. Hopefully we'll have untangled headphones, a little behind-the-scenes story. You know, a whole range of things from that point of view. Stevie Winwood is up next. Thank you. bills, 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 and more bills. It sometimes seems as though life is just a series of actually paying various companies for various services rendered, etc. However, a recent survey by retailer Carphone Warehouse has reported that 56% of consumers don't know the standard price of energy bills for their home. And of those who receive energy bills through the post, only one in five actually read them. This whole classic line of billiteracy clearly is not an effective way to manage one's finances. And when we're looking to manage one's finances effectively, then who better than ace financial writer extraordinaire and top broadcaster, the wonderful Simon Reed. How are you, Simon?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. And thank you for that introduction.
That's perfectly OK, Simon. Now let's move to this particular aspect, because I've just been reading my own energy bill and I realised that I hadn't sent in an estimate, so they're kind of overestimated by a whole range of things. It's important that we actually keep appraised of what we're actually shelling out for. Otherwise, those estimations, they can charge whatever they wish, it would seem.
Well, they can't charge you whatever they wish, but they can overcharge you. And the fact is, if you don't know how much you're paying for your gas and electricity, the chances are you are overpaying. And you wouldn't just pick up food from your grocery store without knowing the prices. You check the prices. You should do exactly the same with all your regular bills. You know, we have to heat and light our home. We might as well get the best price we can for it.
Is there a classic case of almost British financial illiteracy here, which kind of plays very much into the hand of certainly the big six companies and the whole notion of saying, well, OK, if we just nudge this up slightly, we can actually increase a couple of pennies here, a couple of pennies there, and suddenly we've got huge profits?
I think that's exactly right. I think two elements come into play. First is we think that these big companies are not going to rip us off. We trust them. We've been with them for years, but the fact is they will rip us off. They rely on us, the fact that we've been with them for years, so they can overcharge us. I think you'll even find that most of the big six companies have better tariffs than the one you're likely to be on. But the fact is you'd be better off switching to another company altogether and saving hundreds of pounds, you know, and it's quite easy to switch these days. You know, you can go online, find a different prices and switch there. Or companies are now offering collective switches. There's a new green switch, collective switch from Carphone Warehouse, which seems a great way to save up to £296 a year, getting them to do all the negotiating for you and coming up with a better deal.
Well, I've got to actually hold my hand up here and say that as I'm actually only electricity, I have actually stayed with the same company actually for the last 25 years. I haven't changed at all, really. But I do read the bills. I do check the things from that perspective. Is it a kind of a reluctance, not so much a fear, but despite all of the publicity, is there some sort of sense that is deep-rooted in us that says, oh, there must be a catch here somewhere?
I think that's probably true. I think people think, well, I'm happy with what I'm paying. But the fact is, if they don't know how much they're paying and if they don't know how much cheaper it is, then they're fooling themselves. What I like to say to people is this: give me an hour of your time and I'll save you hundreds of pounds. And most people will say, well, what do I have to do? All you have to do is switch your energy supply and you've got an extra couple of hundred quid in your pocket. Now, I think anyone who doesn't take advantage of that really is being a bit foolish.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, how often should we actually be checking our meter readings? Because it is a lot easier than used to be the case. I mean, it was fairly simple to actually find out where your electricity meter reading actually was and then to actually read through the digital numbers that are actually there. Would you recommend once a quarter, once a week, once a year?
Well, if you do it regularly, you know, the fact is that one in five people has never sent their meter readings to their energy supplier, which means the only way they can charge them is by estimating the use, and that will almost certainly lead to overcharging. So you should do it regularly. It doesn't need to be once a week, but I'd say, yeah, once a quarter, just to keep things ticking over, to make sure you're not being overcharged. And once you get into the habits, like a lot of things, it's no big deal, really.
See, being a traditionalist, I have up to now actually submitted my readings via that wonderful thing, the telephone. A few weeks ago, I decided, OK, I'll do it electronically. I did it electronically, and then instantly I get a response back saying, thank you for registering to receive all further bills via email from us. I hadn't done that. I still wanted the paper copy. Is that a sort of area where, again, it can sort of switch people off and say, look, all I wanted to do was to just submit my energy routine, my energy reading, without going through X number of routines, and now suddenly you've signed me up for something I didn't really want to sign up for in the first place?
You know, that can happen. To be honest, Alex, I would say switch to online, because you get charged extra for your paper bills. Wow. You don't need paper bills. You get your email with a bill. It's quite easy to read and it will save you money.
Do you know, I think you're nudging me into the 21st century with this one, clearly, Simon. Is there a lack of trust ultimately when it comes to the relationship between consumers and energy providers. We hear so much in the media about how, as we said, the profits are huge, how a bit like the old petrol oil situation. Clearly, that's another energy routine. We have a rocket upwards, feather downwards. That things tend to sort of go sky high, or there's the sort of headline figures where it's saying we're going to be charged this, and this, and so on. So ultimately, we kind of think, a plague on everybody's house.
I think it is true that the big companies will rip you off if you don't do something about it. You know, the fact is there are some people who pay much less for their energy than the majority of people. And they, you could call them savvy shoppers, but it's just being sensible. You find out where the better deal is, and you do it. People do it with their grocery shopping. You know, you don't go to the most expensive supermarket just because you've always gone there. When you realise there's a cheaper supermarket down the road and you can, you know, save a lot of money on your bills, then you'll do it. And you should do exactly the same with your energy.
See, clearly, Simon, this is one of the reasons why you were the best ever finance editor at the Independent. So, yeah, it's a classic line for this. But we've spoken a great deal about, obviously, the way forward. I think clearly it's a case of fighting for your right, not just to party, but to actually have your right to save funds on that point of view. Where can people go to for further information? They'll be listening to this either live or as a podcast. What's the best way to actually go online and find out more details about the kind of things we've been discussing?
So, you know, if you really want to save money in your energy, you should switch. You can go online and find a comparison site, or you know, if you think that seems quite hard work, there's a new green collective switch from Carphone Warehouse. You can find out all about that at carphonewarehouse.com/energy/switch.
Splendid, Simon. We've got our usual customer satisfaction survey from yourself at this particular stage. Have you had a reasonably satisfying telephonic link with us on the programme this morning?
It's been absolutely fantastic.
In which case, can we look forward to connecting with you again, hopefully in the not too distant future?
Brilliant stuff.
That was, of course, Simon Reed, broadcaster and financial expert. Tessa, in a week's time,
yes,
in this particular slot, and indeed in the slot at 7 o'clock, we'll be featuring Carrington McDuffie.
Yes, exciting.
It's been a long time since we played some Carrington McDuffie.
So it's been a while.
Exactly. So hopefully leading us around to William Sitwell, or his voicemail, who knows, perhaps he's too busy mowing his lawn. we have got Crush on You by Carrington McDuffie. Do you think the world is ready for this?
I think they are. Baby, 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 come. Who's gonna make me feel lonely? I told you that I'd cry for you, but only for a week or two, and I'm through crying. Sugar, 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 honey. Hurt your feelings, hurt your feelings all over. They say to react to no man's game, but it always comes out the same, and it's still trying. I showed you that I'd fight before, but I don't wanna fight no more. I don't care if you go or stay, but things just can't go on this way. No, things just can't go on this way. Don't you see? You got a crush on me. Well, me too. I got a crush on you. Don't you see? You got a crush on me.
it's true, I got a crush on you. Don't you see, you got a crush on me. And I do, I got a crush on you. Me too, baby, I got a crush on you.
And she'll be performing in this very studio sometime next week. Oh, such excitement. Where can we go after this?
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Far, far, far too long since Rachel Abbott uttered those words. In fact, she's moved to Yorkshire now and is obviously still looking after Bean, as we heard. It's not Giles. But yes, we... Astonishingly, Tessa, as I confessed, I think on air yesterday, had a typographical error and yes. actually sent a running order which had William Coles, of course, our Wednesday correspondent from Edinburgh.
That could be confusing. As opposed
to, and quite rightly, instant response, who is this William Coles? From our man who clearly is the awesome, legendary lawnmower extraordinaire. One man went to mow. It's William Sitwell. How are you, William?
Yeah, good morning. Very well, thank you. Nice to be back on your little... station.
Well, exactly. It's perfectly formed. I feel sort of like twinned with Soho Radio's in all sorts of wonderful ways. Tessa Snart was already saying she was delighted you were on the programme today.
Yes, I was saying that.
It's just, you know, you're one of, in fact, if I say Tessa, William Sitwell is on your list of all-time great dinner guests you'd like to invite, really.
Oh,
right?
Yes, definitely.
Know, William Sitwell.
Definitely.
Who else is there? Saddam Hussein? Who else is on your list?
Well, that would be good. No, I was just telling Alex that we've got a variety of wonderful characters that we have on the show. Mm. And if you put them all in one room, I think we could get a really good conversation going.
Nuclear fission.
Yes.
Exactly. Or fusion. One of the two. Yes. We actually have it. Certainly, Richard Fitzwilliams and William Sitwell, I feel it's my duty to actually put together. You've got the ace royal correspondent
definitely.
From CNN and, of course, Brands Media, fantastic, and author William Sitwell. It's that. We've got the Edith Sitwell connection there.
There you go.
But we're not here just to talk and share about matters like that. We talked about mowing. Let's go round the studio team. Let's start off with our Lincolnshire Agricultural Society team. First of all, let's go to Emma Haig. Emma, where do you sit as far as lawn mowing is concerned?
Well, my dad has a ride-on lawnmower, which he takes great pride in.
Okay, this is good. Gemma?
I've actually never used a lawnmower, so...
Have you got somebody to do it for you?
Yeah,
my dad normally. And Tessa?
Yeah, my dad's usually the one to mow the lawn, but I have had a go before. Mm. I have.
Well, again, what prompted me, William, into this notion of saying it's time you came back is, of course, this whole notion of the art of lawn mowing. So for those people who haven't actually accessed the Facebook piece or indeed the Daily Telegraph article, would you like to give us a pricey version of how somehow when you're astride the John Deere, all of life fits into place?
Well, I'm glad. I think it's interesting. We've got a challenge to convert a mowy virgin that you have in the studio this morning. And to explain the joys of mowing, I actually wrote this piece because, as I wrote in the piece, I was on the Thames last weekend and I spotted this thing that was crawling across a lawn on the banks of the Thames near Bray, and I thought, is that a tortoise? What is this? Some sort of weird turtle? It's very low to the ground, and I looked close and I realised it was a robotic lawnmower. Then I discovered that John Lewis's sales of robot lawnmowers is up 75% this year. So there's a bit of a, you know, I think we should call a plague upon robot mowers, because actually it's mowing is terrific therapy for mixed up people like me. And I have quite a big lawn. And so I have five different beasts. I've got a fly mow that I use to sort of swing and trim the slopes. I've got a John Deere that I used at the beginning of the season to cut to sort of tame the winter growth. And then I have a small pushy one for sort of little lines on smaller patches. And I have an enormous mower, a Ransom cylinder mower that a great friend of mine called Toby Grafty Smith bought for me. Well, he didn't pay for it, but he found it for me. So I call it Toby in his memory. He died last year, so I sit on Toby at the weekends, think about him, and I cut my grass and ponder the world. And it's, you know, it's a bit like, you know, sitting on a train you know, if you're working, you're kind of achieving distance and travel while you work. And when you're on a mower, you can think about life, or you can just be absorbed in cutting the right lines and getting the grass looking good. And it's very satisfying when you have, you know, these lovely stripes. There's something about taming nature in an orderly fashion. And so, you know, I think people get a bit obsessive about it. I think it's a legitimate excuse for a man to sort of hang out with machinery rather than women, or other men, depending on his aspirations. So, I love it. I love it. And I get a bit obsessive. And so anyone who, you know, you can go to therapy. It's quite expensive these days. But it's cheaper to buy a mower and sit on it. But then you need to find a patch of grass. You know, I'm not saying that anyone should just get a mower and then stop driving into fields mowing. Yeah. Sometimes I go away for the weekend and I kind of...
Oh, he's
for a moment,
gone.
I thought he'd actually... He goes away for the weekend and he's suddenly sort of...
He's vanished.
He's back
he's
with us.
He's driven off on his mower.
I thought he was into the horizon there, on his lawn mower. William, we got the piece about you. Sometimes you just go away for the weekend and...
What do I do? You lost me.
We did.
Sometimes I just go away. That's right.
That's what he did. He was demonstrating.
Yeah. No, what I was trying to say was sometimes I go away for the weekend and I get mowy, I've lost my thread now. I've mowy withdrawal and I have to find someone else's mower and get mowing. So what I was saying was that also, you know, sometimes one gets tempted just to sort of jump on a mower and start mowing a field.
Yes.
But
I'm sure there must surely, Gemma, be a way in which we can accommodate William Sitwell's passion for lawn mowing. And I haven't heard him be this passionate since we set up the campaign 2 years ago to abolish square plates. You know, it's that sort of level of passion. Yeah. In fact, I'd say...
Yeah, Morris dance.
Well, exactly. I think we're having more success with the square plates as opposed to the Morris dance.
Yeah.
But anyway,
well, I'm not sure.
But you know, there's got to be a way. I mean, you know, to get the lawns ready for the Lincolnshire show in a matter of 2 weeks' time, is your man, surely.
They take it really seriously, mowing at the showground, so... There's a lot to do and a lot of grass to cover. So.
And Tessie,
I was just at I was having breakfast at Queen's Tennis Club in London, and where they're getting ready for the Fever Tree Championships in a couple of weeks. And centre court, I could have stared at that the mowy perfection on that court. It's just beautiful.
It's something, Tessie, you raised yesterday that you're quite fond of the well. Crafted lawns.
I think it looks lovely. I wish every lawn could look like that. But you do need a big lawn, so.
Is it a matter of size, William? I mean, can you actually, do you need to have, in a sense, a large acreage to actually sort of get that real effect? Or can you actually do it in, I don't know, a window box, for instance?
Well, I mean, you could grow a little patch on your window box and sort of get a sort of Lego mowing machine, or just get some scissors. But any little patch of grass.
Yeah, but to achieve that. To achieve that stripiness, you need a particular...
Well, you need a little bit of length, you know, and slightly some perspective and a vista.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can create grandness in the smallest spaces.
The very fact that you can go to williamsitwell.com and find out more details about this is just, quite rightly, phenomenal. let's turn to Emma. Emma, it's obviously your first Lincolnshire show, is it?
It is my first Lincolnshire... Well, working.
Working, okay. So you have been there before?
Yeah, I've
ever been to the Northampton show?
I've never been to the Northampton show.
Or indeed the Whedon and... Where's that? I always get this confused, and it comes around in September time. Is it the Lewis and Whedon, William, or the Whedon...
It's the Western and Lewis Whedon Annual Horticultural Society's show. And that was society set up by C.H. Middleton, who famously worked with the government to get people to dig for victory, and he lived in our village. So he set up the allotments. The village is called Lower Sweden or Whedon Lowest, depending on which whether you enter the village from the north or the south. Quite unusual.
And it's not a fake village, in case people are wondering after our correspondent's earlier concern about the fake American royal correspondent with a double-barreled surname, who effectively is sort of the thing through. So you haven't been there either, I presume?
No, I haven't.
So why should William make... Because he's been to Lincoln before, he's been to the book festival. Soon, I'm sure, there'll be another book that'll be around. We can work with that. Exor Anarchy, of course, is still available. It's an outstanding text. It's a look at Britain through rationing scenarios. must get book, definitely. Why would William want to sort of say, I should be checking out the Lincolnshire show as well?
Because there's so much for everybody. If you like food, there's lots of amazing different foods to try. If you're looking for something a bit more exciting, then there's lots for the family to do. We've got a laser cube coming, which is very exciting.
A laser cube?
Yes, cool. We're excited about this. So it's from what I understand, it's like an inflatable cube, and inside they do like a laser show, but it's all like aviation themed this year, with it being RAF 100. So we're excited for that. So
well, you see, there you have it, William, a laser cube and great lawns that you can actually watch from the members' lawn with a glass of Pimm's and so on from the hospitality marquee, and probably very little artificial intelligence. I mean, that surely has to be a way of spending a couple of days in June, 20th, 21st of June, that is.
I've literally turned my bicycle around. I'm heading north to Lincoln.
Maybe next year you could incorporate lawnmowers.
We do have, we sell lawnmowers at the moment.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
and it could be a lawnmower.
Are they lawnmowers you drive? Because, I mean, one thing we haven't talked about is William's a plague on machinery, a plague on artificial intelligence. Mm. It's a human interaction with man and machine, not man replaced by machine, or woman replaced by machine, clearly, from that point of view. Will there be artificial intelligence there in terms of lawnmowers? Will there be robotic lawnmowers?
I don't think so. With it being an agricultural show, it's all about man and machinery, so keeping that connection.
So we're keeping it real, Lincoln, and we're keeping it real for you, William. That's the important thing. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us as we're in the summer season now, and it's been far too long since we connected with you, and I'm going to put that right fairly rapidly, because it used to be a weekly regular slot, etc., and there's a gap, etc. Good news is, Ben Lewis is back from Bentley,
and
I know that Ben was saying, you know, he lives he lives quite literally for William Sitwell's contributions to the program. Well, not in, not in a scary story.
Oh no, not
sense.
In a weird way.
No, but
just in a
fine of, you know, he's always, when I was visiting him at the Bentley factory in Crewe, his first words to me weren't, "Hello, Alex, good to see you." It was, "When's William Sitwell next on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition?" You know, so your fans are growing ever more.
But
is there any area that you'd like to briefly share a few words with us about, William, on this fine June day?
No, I think it's just need a drink, then. Are we ready after this?
Well, funnily enough, we'll be off to actually sort of engage in some water or possibly coffee if we're not sort of... It's interesting that coffee could be, according to Stephanie Romaszewski, viewed as negatively as tobacco is in 20 years from now. Mm. Don't forget, you can also listen to William on Biting Talk. That's via Soho Radio. And you can also access Waitrose Food from a fine establishment. And the clue is in the title. Waitrose Food. Yes, of course.
Well done, yes. And you can get Biting Talk on download it on iTunes now.
So
if you want to listen to Britain's liveliest food and drink show, go to iTunes and look for Biting Talk.
Exactly.
Lots of people are doing it. I recommend it.
Well, there you have it. And in a matter of moments, we're going to talk about death with
the
co-founder, the co-founder of Pure Cremation. That's cremation, but pure. Catherine Powell and indeed psychologist Sam Owen. So we'll be discussing that and more. Tessa, it remains for you to put those last two questions to the awesomeness that isn't William Coles, but is William Sitwell.
William, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I've had a reasonable telephonic link.
Reasonable. I think it's been good. And will you be returning to the show soon?
Without a doubt. I'm back.
Oh, that's good.
Never going to get rid of me.
Oh. Lashings of country news,
science fiction
views, top interviews and a clear audio muse. It's the Midweek Drive on Siren 107.3 FM.
Bye.
tenuous link from William Sitwell and his culinary delights to the jam, but we made it. Let's talk about getting tickets for the 2018 Lincolnshire show, please, Gemma.
So tickets available online now. In advance, so we've got £20 for an adult, £6 for a child or 17 young person, £42 for a family ticket. You can also get them in stores as well.
You can buy on the gate, but you can actually make a saving by purchasing online, presumably. Mm,
yeah, so it's discounted advance tickets.
But with only 12 days, 13 hours, 25 minutes and 44 seconds to go, you've got to get on to
really
those tickets. Exactly, because you know there are bonuses to actually be made, but you don't want to lose out on that particular side of things.
It's a popular show, so grab them while you can.
Otherwise, that FOMO, fear of missing out, will become as bad as fear of spiders and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So go for it from that point of view. Onwards. Check out LincolnshireShow.co.uk for all of the details that's coming through with that. We might have one last little line about that. If I'll ask this now, we'll turn to Emma. What are you most looking forward to in this Lincolnshire show? Or will you be able to see it? Or is it a case of, no, now I'm actually working as part of the awesome crack team that Jane Southall and Sally Mundy assemble from the whole thing? Actually, we've forgotten our other soul who's actually there, who is Rachel. So,
yes,
you know,
yes.
Rachel might have sort of been saying, they've forgotten, they've ignored me completely. You know, it's all right. We hadn't, Rachel. I've just mentioned your name twice there. It's very confusing because she's changed her surname, you see, since it's life. It's nothing deliberate. It's just maybe the police were after her. Sorry. But what are you most looking forward to?
Well, I'm most looking forward to the food. I'm very excited.
So that food, the sort of just browsing generally, you're grazing?
A bit of everything, really, when I have time.
That's okay. And Gemma?
I'm really looking forward to the RAF Falcons landing into the main ring.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So it's got to be good weather, obviously, otherwise,
yeah.
You know, who knows what happened. And they've got to actually meet you. It's quite extraordinary, really, what goes on. Still, Tessa, your thoughts? What are you looking forward to for Lincolnshire Show 2018?
I think just everything. There's always something to see there. So
your
I
first
don't
show
think
as a graduand, of course,
yes,
as opposed to an undergraduate.
Yeah.
Splendid. Up next, as promised, is Generation Z, Aussie breaking the last taboo. Still can't turn away. So when we put this into the schedule initially, Tessa, quite rightly, you said, oh, that's a bit of an interesting subject to actually feature on the programme, talking about death.
Especially to end the show, but yes.
To end the show, quite literally. The whole thing. Don't worry, we're working through that. But with a whole range of research playing the notion of technology and the taboo of death and so on, who better to actually talk about some of the findings of this survey than ace psychologist and top relationship coach, the fabulous Sam Owen. How are you, Sam?
I'm wonderful, thank you. How are you?
Very good indeed. I feel like energy already coming through, permeating through the airwaves, which is great. And also co-founder of Pure Cremation, the wonderful Catherine Powell. How are you, Catherine?
I'm very well, thank you.
Marvellous. Sam, let's turn to you first, because a couple of hundred years ago, Victorians used to have lots of lines about death, the Gothic lines that came through, a whole range of the funeral was a big scenario. And we kind of, through the 20th century, kind of got to the stage where we say, just don't talk about it. Just do not mention the D word at all. Is it a case of just cultural shifts that's impacted on this? Or is it a case of, well, that's the way life goes?
It's a funny one, really, why we are so caged about having the conversation. However, the research by Pure Cremation shows that we are becoming more willing to talk about death and our loved ones' final wishes. And really, that's what we're talking about today, is the fact that regardless of how things have been in the past, we are a constantly evolving society. We are moving forward at, you know, rapid speeds. And with that, you know, it means that we have lots more choices and we like to personalize a lot of things in our lives. And actually, funerals are going that way as well, where, you know, people have different desires and different visions for their funeral or for a celebration of their life at the end. And so it's about having those conversations with your loved ones, letting them know what your final wishes are, finding out what theirs are. And talking about death actually can have a lot of benefits as well, because it gives you perspective whilst you are alive about what you're doing with your own life, how much love and commitment you're giving to your loved ones. So, you know, however things have been, you know, things are definitely changing now.
Okay, in the studio we have got five wonderful souls. We've probably got many, many years, but then again, you never know. It could be the last day on Earth. We just don't know. Let's turn to Emma first. Emma, you've already said in the first part of the programme you have spoken about death, but not, it's not a kind of topic you raise regularly. Does what Sam has been saying resonate with you at all?
Yeah, I think we're very sheltered and we don't like to speak about it. But I think in my family recently, donor cards have been been spoken about.
Okay.
And I hadn't done it until recently, and it was just kind of like, you don't need your body anymore when you die. So that's kind of been spoken about in my family recently.
Okay. Gemma?
Yeah, I think it's almost maybe not spoken about because it's quite depressing and sad. So.
No, you don't want to sort of say, so when are you going to die, though? Let's look at the death clock. So, okay. Tessa?
Yeah, it's the same for me. I guess it's a subject we shy away from. I mean, I have spoken about it. And in fact, my mum, she's always said when she passes, she'd like a really happy funeral, like carnival, like, because I know they do that in different countries. In New Orleans, yeah. So, we've spoken about that before. But usually we don't bring it up, but yeah.
Sam, is that kind of typical responses, or is it, you know, as British folk, we're still a bit scared to talk about, as we say, the D word?
We are definitely still scared to talk about it because, you know, it means that you have to confront the notion of losing your loved one, and that's sad enough, and so we kind of try to push those things to the back of our minds. But, you know, it is the inevitable, and yes, you know, it was lovely to hear their thoughts on the matter, and I think it definitely reflects modern society. But even interestingly, at the end there, I think it was Tess was saying, we have spoken about it, but it's kind of, you know, just a little bit is the feeling that you get. And I think, you know, that's the thing, that we are becoming braver about having that conversation. And when we do, you know, we find out, like, you know, her mum wants to have a carnival-like send-off. And I think that's the thing. A lot of people nowadays want to have something that's tailored to them. So for one person, it might be that. For another person, they might want to have, I don't know, metal music playing at their funeral, or they may want to have some magicians going. And it really is, it's just about choices, isn't it?
I suppose it would be the ultimate trick if you could actually get somebody to it. No, I won't go down that
line.
Catherine, co-founder of Pure Cremation. I just had the PCC, Pure Cremation Carnival. What's the most interesting line that you've had? Or is it a case of, again, you look to accommodate all requests within, obviously, reason, respectfulness and so on?
Well, we're very different. We actually take care of the practical aspects of a cremation. leaving the family to arrange exactly what they want, where they want, when they want to say goodbye to their loved one. I mean, we have heard about some wonderful things, a sunset barbecue to say goodbye on an island that can only be reached by kayak, a Viking ashes send-off in the Lake District. There are no limits to people's creativity and expressiveness. Why should there be? Let's go for it.
Mm. Sam, wealth of material from that point of view. What advice would you actually give to folk who might still be listening to this thinking, yeah, but I don't even want to broach the subject?
Well, here's the thing. If you don't want to broach the subject, why is that, first of all? Is it because you perhaps feel guilt over not spending your life more wisely or spending more time with loved ones? And if it's none of that and it's just that you're scared of it because you don't want to think about losing your loved ones or about your own passing, then here's the thing to remember. It's important to us how we are remembered, what our legacy is when we pass away. And having a conversation now is your opportunity to ensure that people remember you in the way that you want to be remembered, and also so that you can fulfill your loved one's final wishes. Do something special for them as your final sign of your love for them, by fulfilling their desires for their send-off. And ask good questions, ask them questions. What would you like? How would you like to be remembered? Word the conversation positively so that it has much more positive outcome. And just ask questions and sit back and see what people have to say about it.
Gemma, anything you'd like to add? Any observations from that? Any questions? Yep, stunned by the whole thing. Tessa, what about yourself?
Obviously, in your profession, how do you deal? Because you must obviously you work with death, things. It's kind of hard to say, isn't it?
But
how do you deal with that on a day-to-day basis?
People need us to support them, to give them what they are asking for, without judgment, with care and respect, and to listen to their story about mum and help them in whatever way we can to honour that really special person. But Sam's right. Talking about it now makes a huge difference. Families that are unsure what to do have additional anxiety and grief. Make it the last gift you give your family, the gift they never knew they needed. Tell them what you want.
When do you think, in a family, what age do you think you should start talking about it, especially if you've got children? Do you think there is an age that you should start talking about it and planning?
Or is it, do you wait until the hamster finally puts its clogs and then say,
well... because you do have to start quite early, don't you? I know, but, I do hear things at home where people are talking and you do have to plan ahead. Mm. Do you think it's healthy for children to hear it, or would you wait till they're a bit older?
And the hamster's died, sorry.
You have to judge it based on each individual. So you have to look at their temperament. How naturally sort of anxious are they as an individual? So that you can, A, think about when they're mature enough to handle a conversation like that. And that might be 18 years old for one person, it might be 25 for another person. So it's about just judging it based on them, and then also just doing it in a way that's tailored to their personality so that it's gentle, it's comfortable, and just ease the conversation in. And just see from the cues that you get back as to how they're handling that conversation, but make sure you have it in a positive way. And in a somewhat, although this may sound odd, in a somewhat jovial way can help because it just takes the sting out of it. And here's a really interesting stat from the Pure Cremation research that was done, that almost two-thirds of people say they would find it stressful organising a funeral without knowing their loved one's wishes. So actually, you're helping each other out by having those conversations now, because that is going to be one of the most stressful, horrible periods in your life if the person means a lot to you, and you can take a lot of that sting out of it by just knowing what it is they wanted you to do.
And finally, do we have a place to go to find out further information as opposed to simply playing back the podcast and saying, well, that's what it's all about then? Where would you suggest, Catherine?
Absolutely. So you go to the Pure Cremation website. So that's purecremation.co.uk/thedeadgoodreport.
Nice. See what you did there? Very good. Bit of humour. Catherine Powell, co-founder of Pure Cremation and ace relationship coach and psychologist extraordinaire Sam Owen, we salute you. Take care now.
You too.
Bye.
Dave Davis, Death of a Clown. Thank you for being with us, dear listener, for however long you have been in the last 2 hours on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. If you missed any of it, you can listen again via podcast. Stephanie Romashevsky, Phil Leonis, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Sam Owen, Catherine Powell, Simon Reed, William Sitwell, and Dr. Eleni Taruni, we thank you. Final plug for the Lincolnshire Show from Gemma, please. Best way forward to get in touch with the Lincolnshire Show is...
Visiting our website, thinkshow.co.uk.
We expect to see you there. Have you enjoyed your first full show?
Yeah, it's been really good, thank you.
Marvellous. And what about yourself, Emma?
I've really enjoyed it. I shall be coming again.
Yeah, lovely to hear. Tessa, thank you for your co-production. Fantastic stuff. We're off to actually talk about death, give up coffee, and talk about things we're doing for the Lincolnshire Show, which is great stuff. Have a splendid day. Don't forget, 7 o'clock, appointment listening on Siren Radio. It's Sound and Country Vision with Tessa Snart and Chloe Rose and Els Bailey and The Rising. It's outrageously wonderful. We'll be back next week when we have the father of Eleanor Tomlinson from Poldark, who's joining us. Malcolm Tomlinson will be connecting with us. We've got a whole range of other things. We've got the return of Phil Hamlin-Williams and more. We won't ask people to sing Happy Trails, because after all, that was done so superbly last time. But can we all say Happy Thursday? A 1, 2, 3.
Happy Thursday.
Which probably leaves us with about 50 seconds to effectively fill before we actually go up to the news at 10 o'clock. And we'll do that effortlessly by reminding people that Lincolnshire.co.uk is the place to go to find out details about the 2018 Lincolnshire Show. I must admit, I am looking forward to that laser cube, particularly if you can actually sort of get the laser cube together with Chloe Rose and indeed some of the livestock, which is obviously there as well. We haven't spoken about the livestock of people who do like animals. And why wouldn't you? Heaps and heaps and heaps and heaps of good quality livestock. It is actually the best of the best, let's face it, Gemma, that you actually get at the Lincolnshire Show, is it not?
Yeah, definitely.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what you call working to the script, getting things together from that point of view. And who knows, if you really pay attention, you might see some of the Siren Radio and indeed Signet PR Midweek Drive-ettes on location, tweeting and doing all sorts of crazy things for the event as well.